This is Jim Inkster. Welcome to Talk Louisiana. We hope you had a great Thanksgiving, and we're pleased you're listening to our show. And if you're so inclined, please give us a call. Robin Dow is at the ready, 877-217-5757. That's 877-217-5757. Our email address is talk@talklouisiana.org. And Subaru of Baton Rouge is our signature sponsor, SubaruBR.com. We begin with Charles Melancon, Charles Joseph Melancon, one of the most engaging Louisiana politicos around, and he's had a career as diverse as anybody in public life in our state. Been a member of the Louisiana legislature, also a U.S. congressman, head of the Sugarcane League for more than a decade, and most recently secretary of the Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries for a brief time under John Bel Edwards. And this man, who is the pride of Napoleonville, Louisiana, has some thoughts about what it's like in public life now. There aren't many people like him. The days of a conservative Democrat are all but gone. And we're not just talking about Louisiana. There aren't many left nationally. Saw the Joe Manchin, one of the last of the Mohicans. He's gone, or he will be soon. A senator from West Virginia, a state like Louisiana that has evolved. To show how things have changed, in 1988, West Virginia was one of 10 states carried by Michael Dukakis, and now it is one of the most reliable Republican states in America. Many working people in this country have veered rightward in their politics, and it will make it harder for Democrats to win in many states and even in national elections. If you give up enough states, enough of the little ones like West Virginia and Louisiana, you end up having a very narrow margin of error. We won't have a presidential cycle anymore in which a Republican wins 49 states like Ronald Reagan, or a Democrat wins 44 states like Lyndon Johnson. Those days are gone. It's now all down to the margins and comes down to about four or five states. And that's where the action is. So Louisiana next year will be totally ignored. We won't even get a visit in the late going from the Democratic or Republican nominees, because it's known that the Republican will carry Louisiana no matter what. No matter what. So some say it's long overdue for the Electoral College to be abolished, and I'm one of those. But independent of that, we do vote in big numbers in presidential elections. Twice as many people voted in 2020 for president as they did in 2019 for governor. And then in 2023, it was an even lower turnout as Jeff Landry won. And I mentioned that Jeff Landry got 51.5% of 35% of the electorate. Well, John Bel Edwards, in beating Eddie Rasponi, got 40%. He got 40% turnout and 51.5%. So neither one of them got what would be considered an electoral mandate, but they won, and they're the governor, and they have the right to rule as they see fit, because the governor in Louisiana has inordinate power. And we will start with that. I mentioned the Democrats being on life support. In seven elections, two of them weren't even contested by Democrats for statewide office this time, Congressman Melancon. And the candidate who got the best support was Dustin Granger for treasurer with 34.5%. Wow. What do you make of where the Democratic Party is right now?
Well, the party, and of course, back when I was in there, I had experience, I guess you might say, in the non-support, or not finding that the party was there to support me as a candidate when I ran against David Vitter for the U.S. Senate. Years when I was younger, and part of the Democratic caucus, or the state caucus, we got involved and we got active. We were, we were there. I mean, even through the time of Jim Brady, participatory politics and having candidates and viable candidates. But times have changed, and part of what's brought those changes is the reapportionment process, gerrymandering process, if you would. And the monies, obscene amounts of money that are required for people to get elected. I think if we reform those two items and went to a system where the districts were, as they're supposed to be, concise and more compact, and generic, not generic, but more cohesiveness in the communities, I guess, if you would, that we might see that getting better. But until we take this, especially this black money, dark money that's out there, until we take it out, I don't see how we get competitive races. We get either Republicans or we get a Democrat, and nobody that is either a moderate Republican or a moderate Democrat, which used to be where the coalitions got built, where work mm-hmm. got done, where when it came time to perfecting legislation, something came to fruition. And even though some people may not like it, it's one of those things where if everybody's happy, you probably done too much. If everybody's mm-hmm. not happy, we're totally happy with the bill, then you probably have a good bill.
Well, in 2010, which is when Charlie Melanson was last on the ballot, he gave up his congressional seat to challenge David Vitter, who was thought to be wounded by scandal, the prostitution revelations. There had been rumors for years, but the revelations, which he admitted, came out in 2007. So many thought he was going to be in real trouble in 2010. And instead, in an off-year election, and to show you, turnout was much larger then than it was for the governor's election this last go-around on October 14th, Jeff Landry won with 547,000 votes. Well, Charlie Melanson in defeat received 477,000 votes, and David Vitter in victory received 715,000 votes. So there were more people who voted, but Vitter won going away. And Vitter was kind of a bellwether because back in 2005, when Democrats had every statewide office at that time after Fox McKithen's death and Al Ader's appointment as his successor, the only office from a statewide vote perspective held by Republicans was a U.S. Senate seat held by David Vitter. But Vitter won, and this was 2 years after President Obama was elected. And Obama was, I think, a moderate Democrat. He did not rule from the far left at all. But the fact that he was an ethnic minority in the South didn't play well with probably 5 to 10% of the electorate. And as you know, Charlie Melanson, elections are won at the margins. If you take 10% off the board and you're a Democrat, you're in real trouble.
You're in trouble. Yeah, and you... I've experienced, I guess I'd call them former friends, because some people that I knew that I thought were closer friends than they actually were, basically decided that I was no longer their friend, and some of them go back to high school and college, because Barack Obama led my ticket, and of course I'd say, well, you know, I got flack from the Democratic liberal side because mm-hmm. I voted too conservative in their mind, and then I caught hell from the Republican side because I didn't vote conservative enough in their mind. And of course, I went in as a moderate, a blue dog, which I find irony. I see pictures during the election cycle just passed, people running for office with the Blue Dogs up behind them. And the Blue Dogs is a Democratic organization, and these were all Republicans taking pictures with the Blue Dogs in their office.
Right. I remember when Ronald Reagan ran, and he was, I think, a guy who showed that a Republican could get working-class votes. He was using Happy Days Are Here Again at the convention. And that's a Democrat song.
That's a Democrat song way back. Well, the last time Louisiana was in play as a potential swing state was when Bill Clinton ran for president. That's probably the last time
he won twice here.
Yeah.
And he won big. And as polls have shown, Perot pulled evenly from Clinton and Bush, and Clinton won that election by 7 percentage points over George Bush, and it was an embarrassing show for a sitting president. They too became best of friends, and now at that time, 1992, it looked like we had a real leftist in Clinton and a real right winger in Bush, and today those two
look like moderates at best.
They do. They do.
I think about when I was in the legislature, John Hankel, Pepe Bruno, Charlie Lancaster, to name a few, Gary Forrester, were friends of mine. We may have disagreed some places, but for the most part, when it came time to governing, to passing legislation, we get in the room and talk about what it is that in the bill that we each felt served the people. And you came out with a bill for the most part, and you legislated. You didn't sit up there and holler and scream and demagogue and pontificate and whatever else they might call it that people seem to want to do these days.
Well, we'll talk about where we're going. And, of course, one of those who was considered a person on the right-wing fringe, Mike Johnson, is now Speaker of the House. But he's finding out, as a leader, he has to make some compromises, which may end up being his undoing like they were for Kevin McCarthy. We'll continue with Charlie Mawson after this. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to Talk Louisiana, your number, and we will go to the line shortly. 877-217-5757. Robin Dow producing, and your email address is talk@talklouisiana.org. Charlie Mawson, who may go down at least in my lifetime as the last conservative Democrat to win in Louisiana and one of the few in the country, he won a close race in 2008 over...
It was 06, I guess. Well, I took office in 05, so it was 04.
The special? Yeah. Okay.
No, it was a regular cycle, but...
It's 04. Geez, I didn't realize. 04, so you actually served six years. 6 years, but you won a close race.
Yep.
And...
565, maybe?
Over Billy Tozan...
Yeah.
Billy Jr.
Yeah, I've got the guy that was doing my advertising, and of course the next day after the first primary, we're having this conversation about what's our tack, and I said, I just need to make sure that everybody knows that this is not my Billy Tozan, who I had a good working relationship mm-hmm. when I was in the State House, before I was in the State House, when I was with the Shooting mm-hmm. Cane League. That they know that it's not Billy, that it's his son. And if you go on YouTube, you can find that ad that ran that year. And it was this little kid that out of Nashville they found that did a commercial. And I didn't want it to be anything mean. I didn't want to be attack. I just wanted to try and get the message out there. And it was a great ad. It won an award that year.
Well, yeah, you succeeded the elder Mr. Tozan. And then the guy who succeeded you is Governor-elect Jeffrey Martin Landry.
Yes, he is.
That's quite a trio there, quite a trifecta.
Well, I'm kind of the filler, I look like.
Well, we'll talk about where we're going in the state and the country with a guy who knows our world pretty well, Charlie Mawson, 877-217-5757. Ben on Highland. Ben, I know you've been waiting a little bit, but you're on the air with Congressman Mawson.
Hey, good morning, Mr. Inkster, Mr. Mawson.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for having my call on your wonderful show. I've learned so much from over the years of listening. In the beginning of your broadcast, Mr. Inkster, you mentioned a concept that is very interesting to me, the abolishing of the Electoral College. But I would like to add to that conversation a little bit. Abolishing the Electoral College would require a constitutional amendment because it is written into the original text. But there is a bill that is being put forth on the state-by-state basis called the National Popular Vote Bill. Have you heard of it?
Yes.
Okay. So you're aware that if enough states pass that bill at the state level, it will make the original Electoral College
obsolete.
Null and void is what I was going to say. Yes, sir, obsolete, exactly. So it would not require the abolishment of the Electoral College itself, which I think is a very important distinction to make for the public's reception of the National Popular Vote Bill. I think it's our best hope towards restoring the truth of our democracy, the veracity of it.
Well, anything that can be done would be better than what we have. Now, I realize for those of us who like math, it's kind of fun to see how you can get to 270, and there is some drama on election night about the map, but it's unfair because if you're in a state like Wyoming, which has fewer people than Baton Rouge, you get three electoral votes. So your vote in Wyoming counts a lot more than it does in Louisiana. If you're in Louisiana with eight electoral votes, our vote here counts a lot more than people in California, where one out of eight Americans lives. It's just not one. That stuff about one man, one vote, it's not true. And it's the only race in America in which somebody can get more votes than the other person and lose. And it's happened three times in modern time. It happened.
And the loser has been a Democrat.
Every time.
Every time.
Recently, yes. It was Al Gore in 2000.
It was Hillary Clinton.
Hillary Clinton in 2016. And I believe there's another one in there as well.
Yeah,
actually, in modern time, just two of them have been messed up. But Grover Cleveland, I think, won the popular vote and lost. Andrew Jackson won it and lost. It's happened before, but it's rare, or it was rare, but now we're talking about 2000 and 2016. And, of course, Donald Trump. I've said on this show that it wasn't a close race, and he claimed a landslide with 300 and a few electoral votes, and that's exactly what Joe Biden got in his race against him. But in the Electoral College, it was not a landslide because if Trump had carried three of those close states, he would have been the president, and he would have been the president again without winning the overall vote. And so I don't think that's a good system, and it means that these states, and it's just winner take all, another solution would be to just proportion the votes.
Yeah.
But
I hear the Republicans, their take on it is that, I guess you can interpret it whichever way you want, that the city votes is what elects the Democrats, and those don't count for as much as the country votes.
That they're looking at swaths of land.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Napoleonville counts more than Baton Rouge.
Yeah.
And now some people would like that, but generally, once again, I one man, one woman, one vote. It's not really the concept now. But the states that will determine the next president of the United States, and some of these are probably leaning one way or the other, but I'm just looking at the map right now, and you got Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, of course. And then you got Arizona and Georgia and Nevada and North Carolina. And I don't know if I'm missing one. That may be it. Those are the so-called swing states in America right now. Ohio's no longer a swing state.
Well, is it the SEC states for the most part?
Well, the SEC states are in the bank with the exception of Georgia. But
yeah,
the voter suppression efforts, I think, have worked to the point where a Republican is likely to win. Trump would be the favorite in Georgia. And he would be the favorite in North Carolina. Now, the key for Democrats, and Hillary would have won the election over Donald if she would have won Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin. Those are the states Democrats just about have to win.
Well, you know, right now when these people are coming out with their poll numbers and saying, you know, Biden's behind, you can't really poll for presidential.
You got to poll state by state.
You got to poll state.
And you
by
really
state.
Got to poll these states.
Yeah. To get a real view of what a poll should mean.
And when they say that Trump is making inroads among minority voters, well, is he making inroads among minority voters in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin? That's where it counts, because Biden will get the overwhelming majority of the minority vote in the South and still lose every state, with the possible exception of Georgia. So it's quite deceptive, but I think we can say that Biden is not the most electable Democrat, nor Trump. He's not the most electable Republican. Why are those the nominees likely to be on the ballot?
Well, it's a good question. That's because everybody's sitting back on. They're not even on the bench, in line to be called up, because these two, the president and the former president, are front and center as the electorate. And of course, people say, well, what happens if, if Biden dies? What happens if Trump dies? Then I guess it's a free-for-all. If both of them die, then it's really a free-for-all. And there's probably people out there with their fingers crossed that happens to both of them. But, you know, I look at what we're faced with, and this is the first time that I can think of in my lifetime that it's kind of been a big question mark as to who is actually going to be the presidential nominees from each of the parties.
But Charlie Malasaw, I'm looking at him, he still has his hair, and he's kept the weight down. He looks great. But at 76 years old, he's younger than either one of the prospective nominees.
Not a baby.
And I don't think you're running for president.
No, not at all. Not at all. As a matter of fact, my new job is filler at Bankster.
All right, 877-217-5757. We're back after this. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757. Charlie Malasaw, a man who has his eye on the prize, and he told me I just have a cuff link in the wrong place. So, hey, can't get it right every time. But
it's Monday morning.
It is Monday morning, and we're talking about an election for president of the United States, which is now just 11 months away, 11 months and a few days. And right now it looks like Donald Trump, who by next year will be 80 or 78, and Joe Biden, who will be 82, they will be candidates of the United States major parties, and it means one of them is going to be elected president. That's the way it works. Now, third-party candidates can be spoilers. We're talking about these individual states, and Ralph Nader was certainly a spoiler in 2000, even though Albert Gore got most of the votes. He lost the election, as we know, by a narrowest of margins, 539 votes in Florida. And the U.S. Supreme Court stopped a recount that quite possibly would have made Gore president on a 5-4 vote. So Gore, in essence, lost an election by one vote and went away quietly.
Yeah.
And
Billy Tozan didn't question. That was 565 votes over his son. Now, election night, they withheld any concession. But by Tuesday after the votes were counted, they called and conceded and congratulated me. And, ever since then, Billy and I, and little Billy also,
respect. It's usually considered bad manners, poor form to question an election. Jimmy Fitzmaurice didn't question it when he was second on election night and Lewis Lambert passed him.
Yeah.
But Woody Jenkins did question it when he lost by 5,788 votes to Mary Landrieu, and he never won another race.
Right.
But here's Trump, who lost. It wasn't even close.
Well, if anybody has had any experience whatsoever with the election processes in Louisiana that I can speak of, we have a good election process. Kyle Ardoin will tell you. I mean, he went through all the grief that he went through because he was doing what the election laws call for. I hear these people that want paper ballots, and yet they want to know who won that night. It'll be weeks, if not months, before you get the final count. And one of the easiest ways to steal an election is with a paper ballot. That's why we got away from paper ballots. And all the election information that's held within those election machines in those precincts, they don't go on the internet. It doesn't get out of that room. It is there, and with people witnessing as they open the machines or as they tally the machines these days. We used to physically open the machines and count the numbers on the back of the machines. And that was always probably a possibility of an error here and there. But the new systems, you can get a printed report on what the ballots were to confirm what you visually assessed when you check these machines. But the demagoguery over stolen elections and what did they find? Four, maybe on average in a state.
Well,
that were mistakes.
And most of the stolen votes were not for Joe Biden either. So
yeah.
David in Atlanta. David, you're on Talk Louisiana with Congressman Charles Malasaw.
Good morning, gentlemen. If the same amount of African-American voters would have voted in 2016, Hillary would have won the election, that the same amount of African-American voters who voted for President Obama. Congressman Nikki Haley, as other Republicans, they don't want any new tax increases. Nikki Haley claims she wants to cut spending, but she won't say where. So isn't that another fiscal formula for another nightmare deficit? And when the Republicans say revenue goes up when they cut taxes, that's true. But what they don't tell you is it doesn't go enough. It doesn't go higher enough to pay for the increase in the deficit.
Well, that's, you know, nobody's for more taxes. But the irony is we're giving the tax breaks that have been given to the people that can afford it the best. I mean, the least, the working people, the salaried people, the hourly wage earners. They're taxed at a higher percentage or ratio of what their income is as opposed to the wealthy people. They keep getting the tax breaks. If we had a fair system where everybody paid their fair share, and I hear people talking about, oh, I'm going to Texas. They don't have income tax. No, but they have property taxes. And believe me, they'll tag you with those. They're not cheap by any stretch of the imagination. So there's no perfect system, but to have sales tax as the way to generate your income, that I grew up, and that's what I always heard Republicans say. That's regressive. You don't want regressive taxation. You want something that helps stimulate and helps you to govern with the infrastructure, provide the infrastructure that the people need. Would we pay $1,000-something more per vehicle per year in damage repairs or maintenance repairs than other states? Or the average state, but they'd rather pay it to the car mechanic than to pay it in taxes.
That's the way it is, though.
Yeah, and what it is.
I remember Bob Livingston was on this show and actually said poor people have more lobbyists than rich people, and I don't know what he was talking about, but that's what he said, and I think in his own way he believed it, but obviously, the rich people are getting more breaks than
that's
poor
one
people.
I need an explanation of to understand. Of course, my dad always used to say, if you're paying taxes, you're making money. So I've always looked at it because I thought my dad was a wise man in that respect. That, yeah, I don't like to pay taxes either. Matter of fact, Peachy, I tell Peachy, you write the check because I don't like to write a tax check. But we do, and we pay our fair share, whatever they say that our fair share is. But we keep, the amounts of money they talk about, the trillions of dollars in deficits. The Democrats have been more responsive to reducing deficits than have the Republicans. But at the same time, every time they start, I put premium gas. It was under $3 this week, and the turkey that I bought was, 99 cents a pound, the cost of a meal. And, yeah, we've got inflation, but if you go to other parts of the world, for instance, we were over in Europe this past year in London. In England, you're paying $5 and $6 a gallon, the equivalent of per gallon because they buy liters. But you're paying a substantial amount of money for your gasoline.
Well, we pay less here than we have people pay in California, too. But
yeah.
State taxes are interesting. We still can light up, despite a modest increase a few years ago in the cigarette cost, but we pay much less in cigarette taxes than New York does by a huge, huge margin. Billy Gibson says, Charles Melançon is a political hero of mine. He has a character and integrity and courage that are rarely seen in politics today. And that got you to the sidelines in 2010 as an elected official. And John Bel Edwards, I think, will go down as an aberration because he won twice, and he did it in a Republican state, and he even won once with Obama as president of the United States, 56-44 over Vitter. But he showed, as a listener notes, that a conservative Democrat, if it's the right situation, can win.
Well, you know, they talk about people that ran a good race, and that's been attributed to Jeff Landry. But if you go back, you have to give credit to John Bell in adverse conditions, with a black president, and of course, Nancy Pelosi at the lead of the speakers back in those years, So they bombard you with all the negative stuff that these people hear on Fox, the Fox program, not the news program, but the Fox program. And it's just, I mean, when I ran, it was, so who are you going to vote for speaker? Nancy Pelosi? Well, if that's who my party puts up and that's who I'm caucused with, yeah, if I want to do anything for Louisiana, I'm going to be on the side of the person that gets elected as speaker, and then play ball with that person to the extent that that's what makes me effective mm-hmm. in Washington. Not being against those people, being against them will get you nowhere as in Washington.
Was she good to work with?
She was tough. We had sometimes strange relationships because as a blue dog, I wasn't always voting with the caucus. And as I spoke earlier, the Democratic Party in Louisiana, the leadership of it at that time, opted not to engage themselves in my race with David Vitter because I didn't vote enough with President Barack Obama. And it wasn't because it was Barack Obama. It was because of the district I represented and the nature of the district. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like Richard Baker's district. When he left, it was kind of culture shock that Don Cazzi won. And, of course, that when they reran that race, Michael Jackson got in that race and basically took the black.
Well, and it was when we had no open primary, so a plurality won, and Bill Cassidy got Michael Jackson yep. to run through Lane Grigsby.
Greg Grigsby.
And yep. his political consultant at the time, George Kennedy, and it worked. Cassidy got 48, Cazzi got 40, and Jackson got 12.
Yep.
And that shows you at that time, but that's when North Baton Rouge was in the 6th District. What do you think will happen with redistricting?
It's going to be interesting. I mean, I was in the state legislature back in the 80s, and I saw some maps that drew across North Louisiana, one district, across Central Louisiana, another district, and then subdivided the population areas of the state from New Orleans across to Lake Charles. And, of course, that was 7 districts back in those days. But I would assume, mm-hmm. and probably they still have those old maps and some new ones, because hypothetically they run those numbers all the time to try and give the policymakers the best information they can. So what's the configuration going to be? Is it let low? Is it great? I don't know the answer to that. But my suspicion is if this legislature, the new one coming in or the old one going out, has anything to do with drawing it, it probably still won't meet the dictate of the judge.
Well, and we're getting close. We'll be back for the last quarter hour after this. This is Jim Inkster, and you are listening to Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757. We're wrapping it up with former Congressman Charles Joseph Melançon, who is an astute observer of American and Louisiana politics, and he served in the Louisiana House and the U.S. House. He did so as a conservative Democrat, and today, if he were running, I'm sure he would have consultants saying, you know, you're an impressive guy. You could sell well if you became a Republican. John Bel Edwards was offered that opportunity by one Donald John Trump when he ran for re-election, and he said no.
Well, I had a number of people came to me first, starting with David Vitter right after I got elected, basically telling me that, you know, we'll put opposition against you if you don't switch parties. And I said, well, it is what it is, and we'll just take it as it comes. But, yeah, I mean, I had a number of people came to me. I had a good friend of mine who's now deceased. He was a wise man. He was a successful banker. And he says, so why didn't you switch? And I said, well, I just couldn't do that. Who I am is who I am, and what I see, mm-hmm. the party of the Republicans are way too extreme to the right for me, while some of the people that are in my party are extreme to the left, the party itself governs when it's time to govern, and they get things done. They don't demagogue, and they don't pontificate, mm-hmm. and they don't, you know, do cute things. They do serious stuff, like try and make the country a better place for all Americans and not just one group's Americans.
Well, a listener notes, and we actually discussed this before we talked on the air, Charlie Melanson got basically his PhD in politics after he graduated from UL, then USL. He was the aide to Edwin Washington Edwards, and he's in Congressman Edwards. And Edwards was an underdog in the 1971 race. So those who latched on to him early and were loyal to him, as you can imagine, it is Louisiana, they benefited from that experience. But he not only, I think, benefited from his association with Governor Edwards, who was wildly popular for three terms.
Decades after.
And then was popular as he passed away. And if he had not had a gerrymandered district, he got 38% in a district in which a Democrat has no shot. If he had the old district, yeah, it would have been a horse race against Garrett Graves. But at any rate, you were in the car. You were driving him and Clyde Vidrine around. And I'm sure if you told the stories that you heard with Vidrine and Edwards in the same vehicle, it would be a best-selling book, Charlie Melanson.
Well, actually, my first date with Peachy I got called and said, we've got to be in Central Lafourche for a rally for Edwin. And the guy that normally drove him wasn't around. So I filled in, and Peachy, I think we had concert tickets to go to, she could tell you the story better than I can, cause she's the one that got the tickets. And ended up going to the political rally in Central Lafourche for Edwin, which was huge. It looked like a football game at Central Lafourche on a Friday night. it was amazing. Of course, Lafourche Parish, particularly South Lafourche Parish, was strong Democrats. And when I ran for the Congress, South Lafourche came in for me and carried me. Some of those other areas that used to be good Democratic areas had drifted away from the good life, if you would.
Well, Democrats no longer have any real foothold except in the urban areas. And even Caddo went for Jeff Landry in the last election. And he takes the oath of office on the 8th day of January. So we're now 42 days away, 6 weeks from today.
Getting close.
He was at the Bayou Classic Saturday. He chose to be in New Orleans with Southern and Grambling rather than at LSU with the Tigers and the Aggies. And he has an eclectic group of people around him. It's not just a bunch of old white guys. It is an interesting group of people that associate with Jeff Landry.
I am hopeful that Jeff will govern better than what he politics, and I mean that in the sense that the gimmicks and the tricks and the showmanship. But I mean, this is a state that loved Huey Long, loved Earl Long. When you look at the type of character he is in terms of, not character in terms of the attribute, but character as in terms of a personality, it fits Jeff. And I am hopeful that he will come in here and surprise living hell out of all the people that thought that he was too far to the right. Going to the Bayou Classic, I think, is apropos. And I think it puts him in good stead as a politician who I think is paying attention to what he needs to do for a reelect and maybe for governing successfully. So I pray and hope that he'll do a good job.
Well, let's hope he does well, and he will have an inordinate power. The governor of Louisiana already has more power than other governors. But he has a compliant legislature. He has an ally, his attorney general. He has a field in which he can do whatever he wants or doesn't want to do, because he will get a honeymoon. And of course, people will be watching, but he has his Cleo Fields. His friend says he has the capacity to be great. And let's hope for the sake of our state that Senator Fields is correct.
I have a lot of respect. A lot of people don't think white people. They may not think that Cleo is that they make fun of him because he was young and doing things, but Cleo has a very honest perspective of people and politics, and I have a good relationship with him and think highly of him.
He's a statesman. Well, I think Jaden Daniels is probably going to win the Heisman. Congrats to Southern for beating Grambling 27-22, and LSU defeated A&M 42-30, and Daniels had 4 touchdown passes, 235 yards, 120 yards rushing. So he has the best stats, but he is on a team that lost 3 games. But the big game was the 372 yards passing and 234 yards rushing against Florida a few weeks ago, 52-35 LSU, which has no defense. Here's Jake McMains of Tiger Rag commenting on Jaden Daniels.
I'm a casual fan. Don't get me wrong, I've always enjoyed football. Hell, I even played the sport as a kid. I'm a Baton Rouge native as well, where every resident is a fan of Tigers football. But my primary interests have lain elsewhere. The game reduced to a Saturday night thrill, forgotten come Monday. I've been there for the big dramatic moments, but never down in the weeds of numbers, statistics, and history. But life circumstances have given me the opportunity to delve deeper. One game, one statistic, and more specifically one player, has driven me to go ahead and dive on in. Jaden Daniels. 372 yards passing, 234 yards rushing. I'm ashamed to admit it, but a year ago that statistic would have been completely lost on me. I would have watched Saturday night's game, noted a few good plays, and gone about my business totally oblivious to the importance of that display. But after following this season since fall practice, my understanding and comprehension developing, I can finally appreciate it and safely say I witnessed something magic. How does a guy run like that? It's like he's not even running, he's gliding. It's akin to the movements of an ice skater. There's nothing quite like holding one's breath as that young man shoots down the sidelines, untouchable. How does a guy pass like that? Dropping it out of the sky like a meteor, right into the sweet spot, time after time, all precision, zero luck. It's astounding. There are so many things to love about LSU football. The excitement, of course, but there's also the stuff you can't put into words. Huddled with family around the big screen, out in the sun tailgating with friends, and my personal favorite, squeezed into a stadium seat on a clear, chilly fall night. I've always loved these things. But now there's more. One single statistic that I will never forget. 372 yards passing, 234 yards rushing. I hear all the Heisman talk. I'm well aware that the team and the season are far from perfect. But these things only swirl in the periphery from where I stand in the glow of Saturday night's game. People will analyze, overanalyze, and analyze yet again in the coming days and weeks. But I'm a casual fan. All I know is what I saw Saturday night, and that was a kid entirely locked in, finding his groove and wailing with it. A young man for a few hours in a state of grace. After that, I don't feel so casual anymore. I'm hungry. I want to experience it all over again, and then again and again. I've found a deeper level to this game that I want to explore, and as a fan, I don't think I can half-ass it anymore. So thank you, Jaden Daniels. By way of your talent on display Saturday night, you sparked an excitement in me that I will carry with me, far past the coming weeks, past the season. After watching what you accomplished, I don't think I can go back to being just a casual fan. Thanks for heightening and solidifying my appreciation of the game. And thank you for 372 yards passing, 234 yards rushing. I'll never forget it.
And LSU's 9-3. We'll see if the Tigers go to a big bowl. I'm sure it'll be a good bowl. And Jaden Daniels may or not play now that he has solidified his stock, and the Heisman vote will already be announced on December 9th. There's really no reason for him to continue other than for pride, and maybe that'll happen. But what a season and what a 2 years for Daniels that rivals the 2 seasons that Joe Burrow had. And Burrow won the Heisman in 2019. Billy Cannon won in 1959. Jaden Daniels likely to win in 2023. That's it for today. Thanks to Charlie Malasaw. Thanks to Robin Dow, and for you to listen, Subaru Baton Rouge is signature sponsor.